Hey, thanks for tuning in to another episode of the How to Become an Elite Financial Advisor podcast. I wanted to extend a personal invitation. If you had questions about coming to our How to Charge Live event in April of 2025, that you would go to howtocharge.live.com. That's howtocharge.live.com. Click on a button there that says schedule the call. And I'd love to answer any questions you have about coming to our event in April. It will sell out, but if you have questions, I want to answer them as quickly as possible so you can get your seat to that event. I look forward to seeing you here with us in April. And now, enjoy today's episode.
Everybody, welcome to the podcast, Becoming an Elite Financial Advisor. I'm Sten Morgan here with Bill Case. And today we are going to unpack the language of referrals. And what's awesome is that Bill wrote a book called The Language of Referrals.
Holding it up to the camera now.
There it is. Bill, I love this topic, partially because of my own advisor journey of being excited about referrals, being frustrated with referrals. It is this thing that is always necessary, always somewhat elusive and changing, that if we would have all cracked the code one day, our business would be much easier and we'd all be making a bunch more money. So with all that said, I love kind of your background because you've specialized in this for a long time.
I have. Going on 30 years now, I've been working with advisors around referrals / introductions. I say introductions because these days that's kind of what we need. It's a little harder to reach people unless we get connected, and we can get into that a little bit if you want. But yeah. And I've worked with advisors of all shapes, sizes, experience levels, success levels. A lot of the more experienced guys and gals who come to me, you know, they know about this. They know how important it is. Maybe they used to ask when they were younger and had no fear. And now they're sitting on a gold mine of opportunity, but it's not sure what to say, what the words are, how to get that confidence back. So that's a big part of it. I work with folks also who may be trying to scale a little bit. They may be bringing in a junior advisor or two, either trying to get a younger clientele in the mix or just someone else, you know, bringing in folks. And so I'm teaching them. But the bottom line is it's none of this is rocket science. You'll see that today. It's all about confidence. And so having the right words, the right approach, maybe practice a couple times, like you practice your golf swing or whatever else. And then you'll have the confidence.
Yeah, I do find, and this is true of myself, I look at the things that I spend the most time on in my world. Mm-hmm. And golf's a great example. I might play 3 to 4 times a year. While I love it, it's also not fair to get super frustrated at myself and the results I have if I haven't put the time in.
That's right.
And I find as advisors, you know, we spend most of our time selling. How do we sell better? And a lot of times the confidence may not be there to back up us as the product, which I think as an advisor, we are the product. And so I think as I've heard about different referral approaches, and I'd love your thoughts on this, if there's a lack of confidence or conviction of communicating, I found somewhere behind that is this underlying confusion on who am I and what value do I really bring to the situation? And that just kind of overflows on everything you do.
I think there's some truth there. I remember giving a speech with a group, and there was an advisor, a senior advisor, who we won't talk about the company name, but I think he'd been in business 22, 23 years. And we're walking down the aisle, the hallway afterwards. He says, you know, Bill, I've been in this business for a long time, and I'm starting to wonder about the value I bring. I'm a little unclear right now. You know, been in the business for 23 years. So the advisors that I've worked with and interviewed for my podcast, et cetera, who seem to do the best at client acquisition and particularly around the introduction process are those who feel they're kind of on a mission to bring their important work to others. They know that they take a leadership role, if you will. They want to help people make educated financial decisions that are in their best interest that these people might not make without them. They know how important their role is in getting prospects and clients kicked through their inertia to do something. And so it's those who are on kind of that mission and then build a culture of this within their firm, themselves, their team members, with the relationships with clients without being, and I must say this, without being obnoxious or pushy or looking like that creepy referral guy. Nobody wants to look like that. There's a way to build that culture of doing business. And that's, those are the folks who seem to do the best with this. It's just thinking about bringing our value to other folks. How do we do that? How do we pay it forward, get our clients to pay it forward? And that tends to produce the best result.
That's great. And so for everybody listening, all the advisors, there's a piece to this to where you need to have some confidence. And I know for me as a young advisor, I wasn't just this natural, great, gregarious party goer. And so my confidence had to come from just studying things. Like if I got in a room with a client, I probably knew more than them. CFP, you know, podcasts, reading books, like all the things. I just had to just bulk up my confidence that way.
Yes.
So any advisor that's listening, whether you're a new advisor or you're experienced, you've worked with them all. You know, we all need help in this area. Where do we start? And this is probably you walking us through the book chapter by chapter potentially, but give us a place to start and then we'll kind of get a little deeper and complex as we go.
Yeah. So let me give you the six parts of the book and then we can go back and look at whatever you want. So part one is the inner language of referrals or introductions, the self-talk, right? Not what we're saying to others, but what we're saying to ourselves. And a lot of advisors have kind of some limiting beliefs, mistaken assumptions around this, maybe not as expansive and bigger thinking that they could have. So we address that. Part two is the language of becoming super referable. We got to be referable. We got to make sure. And I was doing a live presentation recently, and this guy knows about my predilection to use the word introductions. And he says, "Don't you mean introducible?" And I go, "Well, yeah, okay." Then the next is the language of promoting introductions, encouraging introductions. And then the next part is the language of asking and how do we ask and isn't begging, isn't pushing, isn't creepy, isn't put, you know, all that. And then part five is the language of concerns and objections. How do we address someone's, you know, reluctance to do this? And not every client's going to do this. And some will do it now, some will do it later. I make the joke, you could run into a burning building and save their children. Some of them won't do it. And that's fine. How do you back out gracefully, professionally? And then the final section is the language of the introduction. How do we actually get connected, introduced, which has become so important? So that's the essence of the book and a big part of the system I teach.
I love that. Well, if you're open to it, let's maybe start unpacking each one to some degree.
Yeah.
I think as we hit some key areas that I feel like with our audience, we're getting the most feedback of kind of stuckness on.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more in there.
Yeah. So, gosh, there's so much around the language, the inner language. Let me hit on two really quick. First one is understanding the full lifetime value of a client. Lifetime value of a client is certainly the business you can do with them over a lifetime, which can be substantial for a lot of folks. And that's great, you know, great value, you know, money follows value. It's all good. But the other part of that equation is who they can introduce you to. But if that's not in your mindset, your thinking, how you're building the right culture, then you'll miss those opportunities. They'll be right in front of you sometimes and you'll miss them. And the other is knowing what it takes to go from incremental growth to exponential growth. So everyone should be getting referrals, introductions without asking. That's a barometer of referability. And hopefully everyone is. And some people call them unsolicited. I've had a couple of clients call them accidental referrals. They count. Don't get me wrong. Those are good. That's a barometer of referability. The challenge sometimes is it's not always enough. That's a quantity issue. Or they're not always the right people being introduced. So it could be a quality issue as well. And so doing a great job, serving your clients well, great client experiences that's so much talked about these days, which I concur with, will create incremental growth. But if you want to create exponential growth, if you want to create a multiplier or a compounding effect, like compounded interest, then we have to find a way to be appropriately proactive. So that's some of the mindset thinking that I put into the process.
What's the range? Because I meet a lot of advisors that, and this is all of our blind spots, that feel like they have a great practice and they're doing a great job. And then there's the practices that me and you would see and be like, wow, you're proactive, you're giving a unique experience. What's the difference between, is this advisor, just because he has clients and he or she's in the business, they get maybe one accidental referral a month, the ones doing it really well get 10 accidental referrals? What have you seen in that space?
Yeah, I can't say this. I've seen anyone get 10 a month. generally speaking, unless they've got a kind of a big team and they're churning through, you know, part of it's critical mass, right? Part of it's how many clients do you have who are engaged and there's a good relationship. I'm working with a guy right now. He's got a boutique business. He's got 85 clients, but they average 20 million or more in assets. Some of them have 75 million. So he wants to double his practice, but his critical mass is fairly low.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's not going to get 10 a month. He's not, hopefully he'll get one or two maybe a month. And then centers of influence are going to have to play a role in his world because of the type of people he's trying to meet. So it really does vary. But most of the folks I've run into who are complaining or who either come to me or just wish they could be better, they're probably getting about two or three or four new clients per year from referrals, introductions.
Kind of and
okay. They would like to do better.
Gotcha. And so I think the main point here is that that's not enough. Like if that's your prospecting strategy, you're not going to probably thrive.
Yeah. If you're in a growth mode, clearly. Yeah. It's not probably not enough.
Yep. Okay. And so then moving to from the inner language of, I think that gets into kind of mindset, confidence, a lot of things back there, but yep. We agree that's very important. And I love that it's the first chapter because it affects everything after that.
It does.
Referability. How would you define that in our space?
Yeah. So a referability is an engaged client. And studies have been shown that, and I got to credit Julie Littlechild with absolute engagement for her research, that there's actually a low correlation between client satisfaction, satisfied clients, and engaging in this process of referrals and introductions. And what we need to create is engaged clients. And my definition is a client who feels engaged with your value. They like the things you teach. They like the questions you ask. They like the responsive service, but they also feel a connection with you. There's a bit of a personal connection. We'll call it a business friendship that develops. Not all clients want that, but most want some of that. And so, if they like your value, but then they're not really connected with you as an individual, they're probably not going to do business and give you referrals. On the other hand, they like you, trust you, but they don't see your value, they're not going to do business or give referrals. So you need both going on at the whole time. So part of it is just in maintaining that type of contact with clients, value add, personal connection. And to get to the language real quick, one of the most important conversations we can have with clients from the very beginning, prospect to new client onboarding throughout, is talking about expectations, making sure expectations are clear, doing expectations checks, checking in. Are we matching expectations right now? Are we dropping short in any way? If you're not in the habit of doing that, it takes a little courage the first couple of times. But we've got to do that because it's the mismatch of expectations that'll kill a relationship over time.
That's a great point. I found there's been times I haven't asked just because I was caught up in the busyness of work and kind of trying to survive the day. And I think sure. Other times when I was really reflecting on that was because I didn't know if I wanted the answer. There was something in me that knew we probably weren't quite delivering fully. The expectation set.
And I get that. I mean, it's not always easy to ask for feedback, but here's the bottom line. And I think everybody listening, watching agrees with this. A relationship that's had a problem, that's been handled well, is a stronger relationship than one that's never had a problem. So knowing that, we almost have to go looking for the problems, right? I know people think I'm nuts, but really we have to clean things up. We have to make sure expectations are where they need to be. People will usually vent about the big stuff.
Yep.
Most of the time, or they'll just walk and you'll get the paperwork. But they don't always complain about the little stuff, but they really wish, your assistant had returned their call or you had returned their call a little quicker. And just to get it up and out and get the charge off of it is so powerful.
Yeah.
And to take the time to know what they expect. What are their pet peeves in working, with you, with others? Very, very important to being referable.
And I think at times to try to then do that in the context of a scaling practice, I think for me, I eventually had to go back to my proposal onboarding paperwork and structure in such a way that it forced me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
where I was setting expectations in the document versus, you know, the yellow pad and hoping I did it well.
Exactly.
So yeah, if as an advisor, you're listening and you're saying, that sounds great, Bill just dropped like three kind of wisdom bombs that maybe everybody didn't grab onto, but the expectation thing I think is big, and the problem solved well. I look at all the personal relationships I have, the best friendships I have, like if there was tension at times, you got to work through it. I don't know if I've put that in the context of my business as much, but a few clients popped in my head when you said that. The ones that stayed because I handled it well, and the ones I lost because I maybe didn't. But think
what,
about
what. I'm sorry. Go ahead, please.
Think about structurally what you can do in your practice to help you remember to do this, besides you just hoping you're going to do it. And for me, doing my facts.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'll give that thing. I was too excited. Sorry.
Oh, great.
It's on your agenda. Every meeting, run an agenda. You'll have a better run meeting, right? It'll be more efficient. You'll make sure you cover everything. And just have expectation check or expectations or value check or communication review, any of those words, put it on the agenda. And so you make sure you check in. And most of the time, everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
But every now and then, there's going to be something that needs to be vented. And now you've created this culture. They know that it's part of the process of working with you, and they're going to feel more comfortable if something isn't working to where they would like it. They're going to feel more comfortable just bringing it up, but having on the agenda, make sure it gets built into the relationship.
How would you, this is a question for me, and I think it'll apply to a lot of advisors too. Say I do that, and an issue comes up. And mm-hmm. I have a client that comes to mind that I'll probably meet within a couple of weeks. Somewhat unreasonable expectations as far as how quickly I'll respond and all the things that we may mm-hmm. do for them. I guess it's an opportunity to just reset. Hey, here's who we are and here's how we serve. Are you still comfortable with it? But how do you hear somebody's expectation and then, in you know, lack of a better word, shut it down or say, I can't give you that?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. I wouldn't use the word shut it down, and I know you don't mean that exactly. The first thing that we need to do is to fully understand, and this goes, by the way, to objections, concerns, you know, around referrals, around really anything. Anytime there's a mismatch, or anytime there's uncertainty of moving forward in some way, first thing on our list has to be to understand it fully, to really see what's behind that, because sometimes there's something behind the expectation. Maybe they're just nervous. They're anxious about things. And they just, you know, when they have a question and it's not answered immediately, they get nervous, they get anxious, right? And so we address that a little bit. And ultimately, you've got to come up with something that's going to work for both parties. It's got to be a win-win. You may have a client where you say, look, our typical standard is to get back to every client within 24 hours, right? Whatever your standard is. And it's good to have a standard, by the way, and have everyone on your team do your darndest to match that standard. And then say, look, if knowing this, if you have an issue that you really feel it's just got to get addressed before that, it's driving you nuts, to, you know, let us know that. Let's put a flag on it, and then, you know, we'll do our darndest to get back to you faster. So it's a little bit of compromise. It's a little bit of agreeing on what the normality will be, knowing there can always be an exception to that. And that'll usually tone things down a little bit for those nervous Nellies that just got to have a response right away, even though it really isn't that important.
Yeah, I think I've over time got better at leading with curiosity, or maybe, you know, if I felt yes. They were pushing back on me or their lack of excitement about my process was almost a personal offense. And then I went on the defensive. Well, no, I have called you back. As I reflect on those and some of the ones I've handled better more recently, it was like, so what I'm hearing is your concern that if we don't call you back soon enough, that we're not working on your plan or that we're not attending to your account as much, that you think that you have to send 5 emails in order for us to take action to clarify it. And that's helped me a lot.
Let me give you one more little thing. If someone sends you a request for something and you know you can't get to it right away, you're going into a meeting, you got the whole day is meet, whatever. Just respond and let them know you got it. Received. I will get back to you later today or tomorrow or whatever. Just something, just receive. Just let them know. Because what happens is then they can let go. If you don't acknowledge the request, then they're not going to let go, and they're going to wonder, because it's an open, you know, it needs a check mark, and they haven't, you know, and the brain doesn't like that. The brain doesn't like open orders.
Yeah.
It likes to close them, right? Likes to, and so if they hear from you that you've received it and you're on it, your assistant's working on it, whatever, you know, that you have to look into a couple of things, just a real quickie, then they can let it go. And they can close that box in their brain for a while, and they're not going to be as anxious because you've at least just acknowledged it.
How do you feel about an auto response that says something like that? Does it need to be a personalized one? I know that doesn't scale as much.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings. I think if you set it up in the expectations, if you say, look, you know, working together, Sten, when you send something into the office, we have a system that'll auto respond, and that's you knowing that we have seen it and we will look at it and we will tend to it as quickly as possible. So otherwise, it just feels like robot response. Did they really see it? I don't know if they saw it.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm just creating some head trash because I love it. I think expectations, every probably team member issue I've had, client issue has come back to like somewhere there was a break in, you know, what they thought they were getting or what I thought I needed to deliver. But then there's the advisors that, you know, I'll work with sometimes, and it's scale. It's what scale is, how do I add as much value to clients but work the least amount of hours? And so there's maybe some head trash of like, I could never do that, Bill, because I can't respond to emails on my phone all the time. There's probably a way to do it at scale. You just need to set better expectations.
Better expectations. I mean, if you say, if it's a thumbs up, you say, look, you know, if I'm on the road or I'm in a meeting and I get a text for you and I'm gonna give you a thumbs up, you know I got it. You know, it's on my to-do list. I'm not going to forget about it. So it's, you know, teaching and matching expectations. The number one killer or damager of relationships is when one party has an expectation, they don't communicate that expectation, and then the expectation doesn't get met, right? Yeah. We've all been there, and that's what hurts relationships. And so, yeah, I mean, I could have called it The Language of Expectations, I suppose. Maybe that's my next book.
Yeah, we just veered off to relationship advice for everybody as you listen. So thank you, Bill.
It is true. It's true in all relationships, yes.
Right. All right, kind of moving next to promoting.
Yeah, so not to be confused with asking. So promoting simple things, like, for instance, one of the titles of one of my books is this phrase. I didn't make it up, but I popularized it. Don't keep me a secret. Client says, hey, you guys are great. You know, I just love working. Please don't keep the work we do a secret. Simple little things. Never too busy to see if we can be a resource for other people you care about. Teaching your clients what it would look like if they thought of someone that you're not just going to call people from the blue and irritate, that you're going to collaborate with them to create a safe introduction so everybody feels safe. I think I got 11 of in the book, 11 different ways to promote, encourage the possibility of introductions, and that will create some. If you're referable and you promote, that will start to get a little more because it's starting to work it into the culture and the conversation. It's not the full on ask, but it definitely can create some nice results.
Great. Okay. Then asking is next.
Yes. Yeah, that's long. That's a whole interview in itself. But let me just give you the essence. The most important part of all of this asking, I'll give you two. Number one, making sure the client's okay with the ask. In other words, just don't be assumptive. The old method that a lot of people don't like and the reason they stopped doing it was called the affirmative. It's like, have you found value in this meeting? Yeah, great. Who do you know?
Right? Yeah.
And that's what can start to hurt and irritate people. So you always want to make sure that you get buy-in to have this conversation. You know, Sten, I got a couple of folks you've mentioned in past meetings. I think I might be a pretty good resource for them. Can I run them by just to see what you think? Can we chat about it? Knowing that we'll be careful how that introduction is made. Oh, who was I thinking about, right? So it's getting buy-in and then coming narrow with your approach. The worst way to ask is, can you think of anyone else who should know about the work we do? Or, you know, anyone else come to mind who value the work? We've all done that. We've all had it fizzle. We've all had lightning strike every now and then where it does produce a result, but most of the time it fizzles, right? So the goal in your ask is to help them visualize people in their mind's eye. Mm-hmm. And one of the best ways to do this, it's age old, it's life events and money in motion. The reason why that's powerful is because most times, and just look at your client base and the people you've met, I would be willing to wager in most cases, those people, they're working with you now because something happened in their life or was about to happen in their life and their radar went up a little bit to work with a professional. And that's why they had that conversation with you. The timing was right because something was going on in their life. And so come with a few categories. You know, Sten, you started working with us because you sold a piece of property and you had a chunk of cash and it made you realize you needed to get a little more organized around your planning and planning for the future, et cetera. And that's what got us started. You know, let's start there. Right. I don't know if you know anyone else who just sold a piece of property, but that'd be a good place. No, I can't think of any. All right, that's right. We're just brainstorming. I got a couple other ideas, if that's okay. Yeah, sure. What do you got in mind? All right. So it's a collaboration. There's no pressure. But I'm trying to get you to maybe picture somebody who did just get married or who is thinking about retirement or did sell a piece of property or their business. And that's gonna lead to more likely to an introduction than the broad approach.
Yeah, we in our community, Elite Advisor Network, we talk a lot about advisor average versus elite advisor activity. Mm-hmm. What Bill's talking about is elite level language. And elite doesn't always mean complicated. That sometimes direct, humble communication is elite, but because it's harder than it sounds. I mean, like you said earlier, people need to practice this. Like, it doesn't come natural to all of us. What frustrates me at times, and I remember doing this, is the average referral prospecting activity that somehow our industry still accepts, where, hey, do more of the below average thing a lot longer and eventually be successful. And I remember when I was, you know, companies to be unnamed, and I don't think they're not doing it on purpose, but I think it's kind of works to some degree where it's every time you meet with somebody, whether it's the first meeting or the 20th meeting, ask for five people's names right away. And if to give them some names, print out their LinkedIn connections and slap it in front of them. We're not here to blast, you know, those strategies, but there's advisors still doing those for some reason. What would you say to those things where it's like, hey, you're batting below 100, get more at bats? It's like, no, how about you just make your swing a lot better?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's funny that you mentioned that because I see myself as kind of the hitting coach. It's like the coaching relationships I have with clients are not the long 2-3-4 year long relationships. They bring me up in to fix their swing. and I like that. And then I give them what they need to move forward without me.
Yep.
So, first of all, there is no one right way here. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that my way is the only way. I know my way works, and I know it's adaptable and flexible enough for people to make it work for them. But if it's legal, ethical, moral, and it produces the results you want, then I'm the last person to tell you to stop doing that. With that said, the two biggest mistakes I see around this are kind of the antithesis of what I just said, which is, they're not getting buy-in. They're not making sure it's okay to have this. They're just kind of plowing ahead and they're looking for, you know, and they put five names on a pad of paper and they're looking to fill those five or 10 or 10 to one, like David Letterman used to do or whatever. Right. And it's so formulaic that it just screams formulaic to the person you're in front of. Right. And so the key is authenticity. And that's why some of the language I use, and by the way, I recorded the book on audio because a lot of folks told me, Bill, you know, we kind of like the way you deliver the words too. It's not just the words. So I did it on audio to kind of let, and that is part of it is our inflection, et cetera. But back to the point is that you talked about curiosity. You mentioned that word a little bit. You turned curious. That's authenticity. Being curious, right? Not having all the answers and just let's figure it out together. That's being authentic. And that's what people want, I think. Yeah, they want us to know our stuff, don't get me wrong, but they don't mind us helping figure it out with each other. And here we're just trying to figure out who else we can bring this important work to. And if you came to me from an introduction, one of the things I could say, there's a lot of ways to do it, but I could say, Sten, you know, David and I, about 2 years ago, did a little brainstorming about who else should know about this work. And that, and he thought of you in introducing me to him. I'm wondering who the next person is to receive the value of this important process as you've experienced.
Yeah.
Simple. It's authentic. It's real, right? It's not a list, you know, and all of that. And look, the LinkedIn thing can work. If we had more time, we could get into that. There are ways to make those things work.
Yeah.
The problem is most people do it in a, and again, a formulaic, robotic way. It's not personalized. It's not relevant to the people they're reaching out to. And that's why it doesn't produce the result that they want.
Yeah. I'm hearing you say, and I agree with you. Referrals need to be asked for. If you want to run a healthy business and you're convicted in who you are, there's, you know, this is a strong word, but almost a moral responsibility to not keep yourself a secret. Like, let people know that you can take on clients if you want to, but don't do it so fast and so robotically that you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. I know for my practice, and I told my team in the past, we have to add value to some degree before we ask for something. Sometimes that can be after meeting too. Like, maybe it presents itself. Sometimes it takes a little more time. But earlier on, you've mentioned to me in the past that you've worked with advisors 20, 30 years in the business that stopped asking.
Yes.
And so I think we all need to ask. And as we wrap up, I want to kind of give you a chance to hit on objections and introductions, but we need to ask as healthy business professionals. Like, we can't ignore this piece. And as it starts working, make sure we keep doing it.
Yeah. I mean, if you want the multiplier effect to kick in, we have to have that level of proactivity. And you know, and get through whatever stuff is stopping us and have it come from that place of bringing the work. It's like, do you believe the work you do is important? Do you believe that there probably isn't a person on the planet you couldn't sit in front of and help in some way?
Yep.
You know, there's maybe a few Warren Buffetts and whatnot, but you know, and the answer is yes, you can. You do bring that. It's all about that. It's being on that mission to bring that value to other people and feeling good about your value. So you mentioned the introduction thing. Real quick, I do want to make a point that everyone's heard me use the word referrals and introductions kind of interchangeably. So I think that when we're in front of a prospect, client, center of influence, anyone has the ability to connect to someone, the language that we should be using is the word introductions.
Yeah.
And or connection, because that's what we want. We know it, the referred lead, the call George, use my name, doesn't work anymore. So we need to get connected, whether it's an email handshake, whether it's in person, whether it's a three-way Zoom. We got a whole section devoted. How do we actually create that connection? And the conversation is not done until that connection has been arranged. Yeah, some will fall through the cracks. But in most cases, if we do a good job creating, helping, negotiating a good connection, then we're in front of a prospect in a relevant way, relevant to them, and we at least have their time and their ear for a little bit, and then it's our job to create the interest and make the case.
Yep. Yeah, that's challenging me to use. I do default sometimes to referral, and I think that has a heaviness to it, an expectation to it, whereas an introduction is, or even a connection, I maybe like that word even a little better, and words matter. So yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and I call the book Language of Referrals because that's what's in everybody's head. And, you know, one of the principles of good marketing is just to use words and concepts that are already in the head of the listener, of the message. But then in the book, I make the case of why the language we actually want to use in front of folks is the word introduction and perhaps the word connection, because that's what we need.
Yeah, it's give them what they want so you can give them what they need. And I think
a little bit of that, yeah.
It's healthy, yeah. Bill, I really appreciate it, buddy. How can people dive deeper? I know your recent book, Language of Referrals, get that. Love that it's on audiobook. What are some other ways people connect with you?
Yeah, so my basic website is referralcoach.com. And if you go to referralcoach.com, you can look at coaching, speaking, other books, online training program, a lot of different ways we interact, sign up for our weekly tips, and just get into my world. And then I'm very accessible, so reach out to me. If you have a question, something that's been bugging you about your practice, let me know. See if I can help.
Deal. All right, Bill. Appreciate you, bud.
You bet. Thank you.